From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
I picked up a course catalog one day, went through it. There were all these credits that counted in this thing called food science. I took one class and absolutely fell in love with the discipline. It was just a brilliant idea for me to realize that there was a whole set of microbiologists, chemists, physicists behind the things, a bottle of ketchup or a pint of ice cream that you take for granted every day. So it just became this really enamoring thing for me to get into that.
Today on The Sporkful, we're talking the science and art of burgers. You just heard Tom Ryan. Tom's a flavor chemist and the inventor of Pizza Hut Stuffed Crust Pizza and the McDonald's McGriddle. This guy's an innovator. In recent years, he's turned his attention to burgers. He's going to explain the concept of flavor display, which I find just fascinating. Understand flavor display and you'll understand how the way you top your burgers affects the way they taste. In the process, Tom will use phrases like meat candy and water balloon of beef flavor. Then, later in the show, I'll talk to the man behind the blog Burger Conquest about the search for the perfect burger. He'll use the phrase beef cloud. Come to think of it, this whole show's gonna be pretty poetic. Stick around. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and I am getting so pumped for our live show at the Taste of Chicago. I'm going to be interviewing Spoon, the band, live on stage, bunch of other guests. I'll have details for you at the end of this episode. But right now, just know that it's free and open to the public, and it will be Saturday, July 11th at 1:30 p.m. at the Taste of Chicago. Mark your calendar and see you there. As I said, Tom Ryan's the flavor chemist behind some extremely successful food innovations, including Pizza Hut Stuffed Crust Pizza and the McDonald's McGriddle. Now, he's chief concept officer at Smashburger, where they have a very specific, science-based approach to cooking burgers. When I sat down with him, that's where he began. A lot of burger books and burger, quote-unquote, experts out there, one of the first things they'll say is, don't press down on the burger. Don't press it down, Tom. Yeah. You press it down, the fat, the juice is going to come out. You name your chain after that very technique of smashing the burger.
You bet.
Please explain to me, how can smashing burgers make them more delicious?
No worries. So this is very straightforward. So really, the lore of burgers, particularly burgers that are either on a flat grill or on a charcoal grill at home, it is true that in the cooking process, if they're cooking and you've got all that great fat, you know, basically melting and basting all the lean meat, and that's where all the flavor comes from, to squeeze or put a press on that beef is going to squeeze all that out. So it is true. You should never press a burger in the process of it cooking. But at Smashburger, it's different. First of all, we take that certified Angus beef and we ball it into loosely packed meatballs. And the key to a great textured burger...
I'm interrupting you, Tom, to point out to our listeners, loosely packed.
Loosely packed.
That is a crucial point for all burger chefs.
It is. Kind of making these loosely packed meatballs, staying and not doing much more to it, and then smashing it on the grill at the very beginning for the first 10 seconds is what we do. It never gets smashed again.
Interesting. So once. First 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the Maillard reaction?
Of course. I'm a flavor chemist.
I figured you would be, but I just wanted to be sure.
So let's
explain
whack
to people.
It's really simple. So that whole searing, so the Maillard reaction is generally the reaction of taking proteins and sugars and caramelizing them in the presence of heat to develop all these great roasted, kind of fried and savory flavors. And so what we do is we paint the grill with a little bit of butter because it's a great heat transfer media, and it also gives us these dairy notes that actually aid in the caramelization. We smash the burger with a smashing tool on our hot grill for the first 10 seconds. The bottom of that, the pressure that's created on the bottom of that, does three critical things. One, it caramelizes like crazy. And so we get this meat candy layer, if you will, on the bottom of this highly reacted, highly caramelized flavor that if you peeled it off and ate it, it would be like intensely beef flavored beyond belief.
Why don't you just sell that?
Yeah, we could. It's like the pudding top, right? But actually, in the context of everything else, you need the rest of the burger there to have the rest of the flavor experience. But anyway, that caramelized layer sets up the burger you can taste in every bite and actually becomes the inherent seasoning. Second, the smashing technique from a loosely packed meatball sets up this really fabulous tenderness in our burger. It's so loosely packed that when you smash it, it's that seared bottom that holds it all together. So when you bite it, think about this. When you bite it, it gives up everything all at once. It releases, if you will. It's like biting into a water balloon of beef flavor.
Wow. Have you trademarked that phrase?
Not yet, but I should probably. But anyway, and what happens is, and that gives you that intensity. And when you've got all this, and so that's another cool thing. And lastly, and probably most importantly, that caramelized layer is actually physically a shell. It's so hard and caramelized that nothing can get through it. And so if you think about it on a hot grill, when you're setting it up at the very beginning, when it cooks, all those hot juices got to go someplace. Because it's loosely textured, they cook up through the burger. There's actually these little cavities. You can see the juices bubble up through the burger. And when we season that top, those juices actually dissolve the seasoning, draw back down into the burger, and the burger actually bastes itself in its own juice.
Oh,
and then when you
stars.
turn it over, that shell that was keeping everything going up now becomes like a cap or a roof. So when those juices hit that, all it does is recirculate. So even with a burger patty that's 20% fat by weight, which it is, we keep all that fat in the burger, which is all that flavor in the burger. So we actually don't have a lot of cookout.
Yeah. I want to run an innovation by you.
Sure.
As a food innovator yourself, I have proposed that it might be better to eat a cheeseburger with the cheese on the bottom, because that brings the cheese closer to your tongue and accentuates cheesy goodness. Do you put thought into the layering of the different, because you have smash burgers mm-hmm. that have different types of cheese. Some have bacon, some have mushrooms or veggies. And the layering of the burgers affects which ingredients are going to hit your tongue first.
It does.
What do you think about my cheese on the bottom theory in particular? And then talk to me in general about the thought you put into the layering of these different components.
So... you know, what you're bordering on is something that we think about all the time, which is something we call flavor display, which is in any complex recipe, how do you want the flavors that you actually taste to sequence? And do you want them to be melded, or do you want them to come through as individual vector flavors, if you will?
That's so interesting. Do you have charts and research on this?
No, but you can. But you could. I mean, I've seen sensory displays where, you know, if you give people I'm making it up, a chocolate chip cookie, and you got a baked note and a vanilla note and a cocoa note and a little orange note from whatever character bean they're using, you can actually have people dial in Frank Lutz style, you know, when they're experiencing that. When you overlay those, it kind of gives you these sensory displays. So in the world of sensory science, they actually do map things like that. But to your idea, and I want to make sure I understand it, if you were to simply take the burger with cheese on top and turn it upside down and put it on the bottom of the bun, which is called the heel, put it against the heel.
Learned a word there.
It may change the sensory perception a little bit, but in most cases, cheese is not – it's kind of a – it is a richness factor, and it's not a definitive character flavor. It more is like a background versus things that display really quickly because they're instant on, like ketchup or mustard or a dill pickle or a fresh bite of onion. Those things are all the things that kind of get real spiky, and when you hit that, you hit it. So we think about it. It may not, you know, it may be better for you if you're really into feeling the cheese, or it might be more of a mouth feel than a flavor.
Right.
But the way you do order things does make a profound difference.
I take your point that in the burger experience that the flavor of the cheese is often lost. It's more about richness and mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. But that to me is an argument for putting the cheese on the bottom to get some of that flavor. You wouldn't want sometimes when I talk about this, people say, well, put it on the top and the bottom, but that's going to be too much cheese.
We do that.
Okay, right. So that's why I'd be curious. Like, for instance, you brought these delicious burgers here today, which I've been sampling. I took some of my bites with the burger upside down to put the cheese and the mushrooms and everything directly on my tongue. Now, that can also be a tough situation because then you get the thicker domed half of the bun on your tongue as well, and that's more of a barrier.
That's a crown, by the way.
Crown, sorry.
Exactly.
The crown and
heel
the heel?
And crown.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah, because it's confusing for me when I talk about the top half and the bottom half of the bun.
Well, now
I'm
you got it.
Eating my burger upside down. People say, well, which is the top then?
Uh-huh.
So that's why I'm intrigued by the idea of putting certain things underneath the burger as opposed to everything on top.
You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of places around the country that do order their things different. I'm not sure it was thought out that way. So I think it's just a matter of personal preference, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not sure if it was a really profound cheese that might make, you know, really intensely flavored one, it might make a difference, but I'm not aware of one.
you're not ordering up any big tests anytime soon. Is that what you're telling me?
Not yet.
That's Tom Ryan, flavor chemist and chief concept officer at Smashburger. A couple quick things to add. If you'd like a burger smashed with the same technique that Tom described, there are other places where they do it. Five Guys, Shake Shack, to name a few. If you want a smashed burger at home, our friend Kenji Lopez Alt from Serious Eats has a great piece on exactly how to do it to get it just right. So I'll link to that at sporkful.com. Kenji has also, by the way, cracked the code of the sauce that Shake Shack puts on their burgers. Shake Shack's a New York area chain growing very fast. They have a great sauce. And Kenji figured out that it involves mayo, mustard, ketchup, cayenne pepper, and, here's the key, whole pickles pureed into the sauce. I've been putting it on all my burgers this summer, and it's ridiculous. So I'll link to that recipe as well at sporkful.com. Coming up, I'll talk to the man behind the blog Burger Conquest about his search for the perfect burger. And he'll explain how growing up with a dad in the FBI changed the way he eats. Stick around. Attention kids and people with kids, I need your help for an upcoming episode of The Sporkful. Here's my question for you. What's your favorite weird food creation? Do you have a combination of ingredients or foods that your parents think is crazy, but you think is amazing? Do you have a certain way of eating something that you invented that you want to tell me about? I want to hear from you. Record a voice memo on a cell phone. Include your first name, age, and hometown. And then email it to me at dan@sporkful.com. And you could hear yourself in an upcoming episode of The Sporkful. This is for a collaboration we're doing with our friends at the parenting podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. So you can also use their free app to submit your weird food creation. All right, kids, get to work. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. David Ciancio goes by the nickname The Rev, and for this guy, burgers are, like, actually a religious experience. He ate more than 600 of them for his blog, Burger Conquest. Like a lot of us, Rev's tastes were shaped by his parents, especially his dad, who was an undercover FBI agent.
He had weird quirks that he had picked up from being, you know, somebody who had to be undercover. And one of the things that my dad did is he always had to sleep closest to the door. So if we got a hotel, he would let me sleep against the wall or, you know, my stepmother or whatever, and I would sleep, or he would sleep closer to the door because he needed, if somebody came in, he wanted to defend us. At the same thing, he couldn't sit in a restaurant if his back was to something exposed like a kitchen or a glass. He always had to have it against a wall or with a few amount of people because he would just get nervous. And I picked it up from him for some reason. It's one of those things my dad was like, you know, watch your back, be careful, don't do this, don't do that. And
right, but was there ever an actual incident that you were present for when you were with your dad?
You know what, there never was. Not an incident.
So when you go to a restaurant, like your father, you prefer to have your back against a wall so no one can sneak up behind you, basically. Is that right?
I don't have it to the extent that my father did.
Okay.
And I've since become married, and so the wife's preference is always win. And she wants to sit against the wall. So I guess as long as she's okay and she tells me they're coming, we're all good.
Does she have as good of a reason as you do for wanting to sit against the wall?
No. It's purely some level of vanity, I believe.
So let's start off talking about burger perfection. You sit down to eat a burger. What are you looking for? What are your criteria?
All right, so there's a couple, like, must-haves, right, that it go in any language, in any burger, it doesn't matter. It has to be fresh, not frozen, right? You cannot do a frozen burger. Ideally, if that can also be in-house ground, even better. And if not, if it can be ground as quickly as possible to your mouth that morning, the day before, stuff like that. The patty can't be too overformed. Right, so somebody handles it a lot, or they mash it a lot, or they smush it a lot, or
yeah, you talk about this a lot on Burger Conquest. You're always talking about how much space and air there is in the patty. Why do you feel like that matters?
Because what happens with if you have the right blend? Well, see, now we're getting to another part of it. You need to have the right blend of fat to lean meat.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
If you have the right blend, right, as you're cooking, you want the juice to stay inside the burger, and you want it to be able to move around and stay juicy. And if it doesn't, there's no room for it to breathe. It'll just stay trapped in there. It'll squirt out. You'll get a hole. You'll lose it. And so you want that juiciness to stay there. At the same time, you don't want a burger that's really coarse when you bite it. You don't want to bite into like a dry sponge. You want to bite into like a pillow. You want to bite into a cloud. You want it to literally just like softly fall apart in your mouth. And if you handle it too much, you cause too much mouthfeel.
A beautiful, soft beef cloud
yes.
is what you're describing. Burger to bun ratio.
So important.
Big issue. I think that I would probably say that I want roughly equal parts burger and bun, which is to say not that both the top and bottom buns are the same thickness as the burger, but that the top and bottom buns together are the same thickness as the burger. What's your thought on that?
You know what? It's funny. Each burger denotes a different type of bun to me. So like a slider needs to be on a white squishy bun, right? It needs to be the same circumference. And it needs to have just enough, enough structure to hold its way through the sandwich. But if I'm eating like a fancy chef burger and you want to put it on a brioche, like, okay, that's a little more chubby of a bun. It's a little more sugary. It's a little more constructed. And so to me, it sort of depends on burger to bun. You never want to be taking a bite and only get bread and toppings. That's just a big no-no.
Yeah. No, that's disastrous. And I should be clear, when you say the word slider, because some people associate that with a tiny 2-inch in diameter burger, you just mean a burger that's on the thin side, for lack of a better universal comparison, like a McDonald's burger except good.
One thing that makes me angry about the world of eating is when somebody calls a burger that is just a smaller version of a larger burger a slider. It is a mini burger. It is not a slider. A slider is a particular preparation. You know, you wouldn't call cassoulet a soup.
But now that term has been taken. Now you'll see pulled pork sliders and you'll see fried chicken sliders. I mean, I can see you getting red in the face.
It makes me so mad. Like, I just hate it. It's so incorrect. And for a society that's so obsessed with food, we know the difference between margarine and butter, right? We know the difference between canola and olive. Why would we not label correctly mini and slider? See, now you've hit the button.
Yeah. Is there a general – I mean, give me a ballpark here on what your ideal ratio would be.
You want slightly more bun than burger, just slightly.
Interesting.
Because you don't want – here's the other thing, too. So you don't want to bite the burger and then have it come out the other side. Then you're holding like a piece of beef or bacon, and you don't – every bite needs to have equal – bite to bun, you know, bun to burger ratio.
Well, that we're skipping ahead a little bit here, but that's a perfect segue to one thing I wanted to talk about, which is a recurring topic here on The Sporkful, and that is the issue of bite consistency versus bite variety.
Ooh, interesting. I like it.
All right. So, you know, some foods, you want every bite of the food to be the same. Other foods, you want to mix and match. You know, I got a theory on my burger preference, bite consistency versus bite variety, but tell me yours.
Wow, I actually don't think I've ever contemplated it in that
wow,
fashion.
Wow, this is great. All right.
No, I don't want it consistent. And here's why. Because a perfect burger should be seared on the outside and, to quote Judas Priest, screaming for vengeance in the middle. Right? And so I want the outer part to be a little more crunchy and seared, and I want the inside to be a little more juicy and medium rare.
I tend to agree. I think that the way I would put it is that I want bite variety from the burger patty, but bite consistency with regard to the bun and topping ratios.
I can agree to that.
Okay.
100%. Right. Especially good. Cheese. Cheese needs to be on every bite.
That's right. That's right. And another great segue. Do you ever eat hamburgers without cheese?
So this is a good question. I will order the burger based on how I want it unless it's chef suggested. If the chef says, hey, you should have it this way or this is the way we prepare it, I'll try that because I assume that they've gotten it to a level that they're kind of happy with it and I sort of trust them to do it. If it's up to me, it has cheese.
Right. I don't understand why the Hamburglar was always trying to steal hamburgers. Like, I would think that he already has enough hamburgers. He should be, like, kidnapping Mayor McCheese and try to get him
to the cheese.
To get the cheese. Like, that should be the crime spree that they're worried about in McDonaldland. I can never.
I can't think of a burger that I really, really like that doesn't have cheese on it. I want a burger medium rare. I don't care what method I don't care if you hold it up to the sun or put it in a, you know, an empty Pringles can on a hanger. I want it medium rare, right? And so in the flat top griddle, which is my favorite way to prepare it, getting it medium rare is almost impossible because you're using such a small patty and like a slider that to get it medium rare, it's like there's nothing in the middle to be medium rare anyway.
Right.
But every once in a while, you can find a chef who can get at least some pink in the middle still. I'm blown away by it every time I eat one. When you put it on the broiler, juice falls out. When you put it on the grill, juice falls out. And look, I love a backyard barbecue burger as much as any other burger, but if you really want to get down to the perfect burger, it has to be on a flat top.
Interesting. I'm a rare burger kind of guy, so I would go even a little more red than you. But do you agree with me that anyone who would have their burger cooked more than medium doesn't deserve good burgers?
Unless it's a slider.
Okay, all right. Like, right. Unless the burger is so thin that you don't have a choice.
Then I would agree.
Okay.
That would be – so I grew up under two grill masters. It was my father and my stepfather. And my father always wanted to make burgers and steaks in the backyard in medium rare, and my stepfather always wanted to make burgers and steaks in the backyard well done.
Did that difference in steak cooking approaches have an impact on your relationship with or perception of your father and stepfather?
You know what? My stepfather wanted to eat his steak well done. He still does, and I'll never understand that, but – there was one thing that my stepfather taught me that my father didn't, and so the redemption goes backwards, is my stepfather taught me the secrets of seasoning. My dad would just put the burger on. He liked the meat like it was. Give me a piece of cheese and a bun, and he's happy. My stepfather was all about, like, you know, let's pour some vino on this. I'm going to come from an Italian family. Let's crack some pepper. Let's get some white pepper. And so I have an obsession with my spice cabinet as much as I do the butcher shop. And so it comes from either of those influences.
So in some ways, your perfect burger actually was sort of like a confluence of what of some things you took from your father, some things you took from your stepfather.
And my mother. So here's the other thing. If you get way deep into the burger ethos here. My stepfather didn't like sliders. He actually would just rather have a steak and a glass of wine. He was a big, big Sicilian man. And my mom, we grew up in Detroit, so we had Bray's and Bates and Dave's Hamburgers and, you know, Motz's Burgers and Miller's and, like, tavern style, slider styles. Like, that still is today in Detroit. And so every time my mom wanted one of those, she would take me, like, okay, Davey. She didn't call me Rev, obviously. Davey, let's go get some sliders, because I knew it meant something special. It was my birthday. It was my mom's birthday. It was Christmas. And so I still, every year at Christmas, my mom and I go out for burgers.
Time now for the lightning round, Rev. I'm going to say the name of a food with the word burger in it. I want you to give me your one-sentence opinion on it.
I'm not sure how many foods have the word burger in them, but let's go.
Turkey burger.
I love turkey burgers, and I found that I want a turkey burger that's made of a mix of dark and white meat.
First of all, I would say, why white meat?
Because it just tastes different. I like the taste of white meat, but I appreciate the flavor that dark brings to it.
I would say all dark meat. But do you agree that a turkey burger is not a substitute for a beef burger?
No, it's a turkey burger.
Kobe beef burger.
You know what? The Kobe beef burger thing is interesting to me. I don't know that feeding beer to a cow and massaging for its whole life makes a burger that much better. I've had, like, ground chuck burgers that pretty, you know, kind of just blew my brain to pieces. I think it's a waste of your money. I really do.
Plus, I just feel like, I mean, a burger was invented. It's something to do with a lower quality of beef. If this is this amazing, godsend, from the heavens type of beef, then shouldn't we be eating it with nothing else?
Yes, it should be a steak.
Right, exactly. Last one. Veggie burger.
I'm a fan. If it's just a Morningstar Farms patty and you got it from the store and blah, 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 you're serving a veggie because you need one, I'm not going to eat it. But if you've taken the time to make something that is delicious, I appreciate the culinary aspect of it. I just don't see it as replacing a beef burger to me. It's its own food item. By the way, you should know something. I believe that all burgers have a place. I even like McDonald's. In fact, the McDonald's double cheeseburger is the perfect ratio of patty to cheese to bun. They nailed it. Everybody should go eat that burger and understand why beef, cheese, and buns are correct.
That's David Ciancio, a.k.a. The Rev. Since I taped that with him, he started working at Schweid & Sons Burgers, so you can find him there. His old blog remains a great resource for burger knowledge. It's called Burger Conquest. Now, more details for you on this huge Sporkful live show on stage at the Taste of Chicago. I'll have Spoon, the band, there. They aren't named after the utensil, but I still like them. I'm going to have Doug Soane, Chicago food legend and the man behind Hot Dougs. We'll also have an opera singer who's opened a donut shop and a mathematician who wrote a book about pie. Well, both pies, the number and the food. Plus, Chef Curtis Duffy from Chicago's Grace Restaurant and food writer Kevin Pang on Summer Food Festival eating strategy. And an Oreo cookie-related activity for the kids. It's free. It's open to the public. That's Saturday, July 11th, 1:30 p.m. at the Taste of Chicago. Put it in your calendar. Put it in. Right now. I'll wait. Okay, great. See you there. And kids, remember that I want to hear about your weird food creations and eating innovations. Record a voice memo on a cell phone, include your first name, age, and hometown, and email it to me, dan@sporkful.com. You can also use the Longest Shortest Times app. Do it now, and you can hear yourself in an upcoming episode of The Sporkful. Next week on the show, I'm going to celebrate Ramadan with a bunch of cab drivers in the parking lot of New York's JFK Airport. Don't miss it. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. We get help from Tim Ruggieri. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Susan.
And I'm her best friend, Rachel.
She's the one that introduced me to The Sporkful.
We're calling from Scotch Plains, New Jersey to remind you to
eat more,
eat better,
and eat more better.